Welcome to the Writer Dojo with your hosts, Steve Diamond.
That's me.
And Larry Correa.
Death smiles at us all. All a man could do is smile back.
Today's episode, Death.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Writer Dojo. Glad to have you all with us today. All right, the whole point of this episode that we're going to do today, we were going to answer it in our last Q&A, but when we started looking at the question, we realized real quick that it would be better served as its own episode.
Yeah. Was this from Rick?
This is from Rick. This is from our boy, Rick. So Rick's question is more or less, how do you deal with character death in a book, and how do you milk the death for the emotional impact of it? Less so like, you know, how did you kill this guy? Like that doesn't like, look, I mean,
I've used all of them.
You use the wood chipper of death.
I have,
you know,
I've killed a lot of people in a lot of books.
Right. But less how a person is killed, although that can influence this, but it's more so how do you maximize the death, the aspect of death within a book to get the most out of it?
The impact. Mm-hmm. It's all about the impact.
Because it's got to matter.
Yeah. Well, one thing, and I've noticed this for many years talking about this topic, people mistake quantity for quality.
Correct.
And I'll see these discussions amongst people. And
I killed an entire planet.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like they'll be talking about some author killed somebody. This author killed so-and-so. I was so sad. Or this author killed... Oh, yeah, well, this author killed 10 so-and-sos. Or this author blew up a whole planet. Well, no one cares. It doesn't matter. Like in the last Star Wars, they blew up like 9 planets at once, and nobody in the world cared or remembered because it didn't matter because we didn't care about them.
Well, we didn't know anything about those planets and didn't care.
But you kill one person that the audience cares about, boom, emotional impact. Memory that is imprinted on them, that is like it's like a big deal now.
I mean the entire John Wick franchise exists because someone killed a puppy.
Yeah, I mean
and what that represented,
it's the emotional impact and how it hits the audience, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Because you can kill 1,000 people in a movie and it doesn't matter. You can blow up the entire planet in the movie and it doesn't matter. You could wipe out species in a movie and it doesn't matter. What matters is if they care.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you make him care or not. We all remember I'm a Leaf on the Wind.
Yeah.
Okay. Holy crap. Everybody remembers that. You'd say I'm a Leaf on the Wind. Yep. And everybody in the world who's ever been a fan of that goes, oh. You know, and that will never leave. That was a great death. Meaningful death.
Yeah.
Interesting death. Surprise death. That's another one we're talking about too, is surprise death. Bringing it on and having it matter.
Yeah.
So how do you tackle this, Steve?
It's purpose oriented.
Okay.
Right. Like in a lot of this, you know, I write a lot of stuff that many people would say is pretty violent. Right. I've also come to the a realization and a distinction that, you know, death is not the ultimate form of torture I can inflict on something.
Oh no, you can do it. Death can be a release. Especially in the horror genre.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, when you think of things like Lovecraft, right? Okay. Color Out of Space, the movie.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like everyone dies.
Yeah. Suicide is way preferable to what happens to most people in this show.
It's real bad.
Yeah.
But the part of that movie that sticks with me the most is the final scene. And it's the black dude who was from Miskatonic U, right? Yep. And when you see him in the very beginning, he's like this environmentalist.
He's a happy guy.
Uh-huh. And then like everyone dies terribly or worse. And then at the end, you see him and you see what the death of those people, how it scarred him emotionally.
It was a great performance because he's just a dude standing at a reservoir.
He's got his cigarette and you never saw him smoke before.
Nope, didn't smoke before.
And his fingers are trembling as he's smoking. He has bags under his eyes. It's been like a day.
And he's like watching the water.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you can tell that he's thinking, being dead is preferable to having witnessed what I witnessed.
Yeah, emotional impact.
And so for me, that's what the death has to have. It has to have an impact on everyone else there. Or the people who matter within a scene.
The people who should care should care.
Exactly. And they should care deeply.
Well, that's one of the worst is when somebody dies, but the characters don't react as they should.
Mm-hmm.
And that is usually a failure on the author to convey it through the other characters.
You see this in TV a lot.
Yeah.
Because especially older TV, when they had like 20, 23 episodes or whatever a season. I remember the show Smallville, which, you know, origin of Superman, basically. There's an episode, I don't know, somewhere midway. There's like 10 seasons of this show, so it's a lot. There's an episode where, in the episode, this chick that Clark Kent really likes dies. And at the moment, it feels impactful. You're like, man, like, the actor did a great job. It made sense. They made you as the audience feel bad. Because it just worked. But then the very next episode, that person's never mentioned again. And so it robs the impact of it going forward.
Right.
Because no one cares anymore.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
It's like, okay, we'll use our favorite punching bag, George Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Book one, about halfway through, Ned Stark gets killed. Who's played by Sean Bean.
The only heroic dude in the book.
The only heroic character, basically, within the entire series, is killed halfway through the first book. And it was a surprise death. At the time, no reader thought that was actually going to happen.
Yeah.
And at the time, in the context of one book, it was very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful.
He just tried to...
But then everyone had to die... an almost ignominious, meaningless death.
He milked that cow till it was dry.
Well, and then he slaughtered it. But he didn't even barbecue it into nice brisket. He just like threw it into the pit.
No, because it was a pretty messed up cow at that point.
Yeah. At the time when it happened, the impact that it had on his family, on the world, on the story, because to your very first point of that, the one good person in the world just died. What does that mean for the world? Like that's a cool question.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important question.
Yeah.
But nothing ever happened with it.
Well, then he just killed everybody
else. And then he just killed everybody else however he wanted.
It was like shocking death, shocking death, shocking death. You do anything too much at all. It's like when you turn the knob to 10, you can't go up any higher.
Yeah. Unless you go to 11.
Yeah, you go to 11. But really it's like the parent that yells constantly at their kid. You know, everything is a screaming fit. Well, then when there's an actual really bad thing or an emergency, well, guess what? They can't go any higher. They've already screamed themselves out because, you know, the kid, you know, did some minor thing wrong. Yeah. That's the thing about like, if you have a screamer as a boss, you know, they scream at you about everything. Because then when really bad stuff happens, there's no difference.
No, it's just
because the tone has been set. So when you're killing characters, you got to think about what the emotional impact is and you convey it because that character's gone. So you're conveying it through how all the other characters are going to react to it. I do like shocking death.
Yeah, I do too.
Because like, but also you can have looming death. Like, you know, they're going to die. Like, they're going on the suicide mission. There's no way out. That works too. I've done that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why Mass Effect 2 worked.
Oh yeah,
because the suicide mission.
Yeah, because the suicide mission at the end.
Yeah, and then through the whole game, you're doing your best. Like you're like, okay, if I check all the boxes, maybe they won't die.
Yep. I mean, and you actually cared about those characters.
Yeah, because they were all good.
They're all. I mean, all of them. Well, there's a couple. There's a couple kind of dumb. Like, if I lose that guy, I lost my Geth, my robot, when I did.
I know the Geth.
My first playthrough. That's where I lost. Yeah. I lost my Geth.
But. But that's the point, right? Like, I want to touch on what you said. You cared about the characters, and the characters cared about the characters.
Right.
Because if you just have a dude die, this is like bad horror movie tropes. When the, like, people just start dying left and right, and use the viewer like, wait, did they actually like each other?
Yeah.
Because no one cares.
Yeah.
And at that point, you're almost like,
yeah.
Yeah, Jason, just do your thing.
Yeah. They're just killing stereotypes.
Yeah.
If you humanize them at all and make it matter when they die, then all of a sudden that's a person. And then it's got emotional impact.
So Rear Window.
Okay.
I've talked about this movie a lot. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
I prefer the Bigfoot version of Abominable.
That movie's so bad.
It's so awesome, though. You know it's awesome. All right, you're right. Sorry. If you haven't seen Abominable, it's Rear Window.
It's so ridiculous.
It's Rear Window with Bigfoot. That's all I'm going to say.
Here's what I will
say. It's amazing.
I actually think that the movie would have been better if he hadn't had an antagonistic relationship with his caretaker.
Okay, yeah.
I think it would have been. But again, we're talking about a B
movie. It is a B movie.
A C movie.
C movie.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Bigfoot's basically the Hulk.
Yeah, yeah. Super bad. Super it's, bad.
But awesome.
Okay, but actual Rear Window.
Yeah.
The whole point, you understand that Jimmy Stewart and I can never remember if it's Doris Day or someone else. I always get this wrong. Anyway, the main female interest in it, you can tell they care about each other. And so you know they care and love each other. You as the watcher, you like them. I mean, Jimmy Stewart's likable in everything that he does. He's even fantastic in like the terrible Raymond Chandler movies. Like, when you see the girl go across the street or across the courtyard to the other apartment where the alleged killer is, and you see that she's about to die, maybe you fear for it and it works. The threat of that death has so much impact because you care about the characters and you know the characters care about the characters even more than you do.
Threat of death is huge.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times you can get that emotional impact of the death without actually killing them. Just you put them in danger.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that can...
As long as you don't overdo it.
Well, and you can use that to set up the surprise death at a slightly... I mean, that's the wash. That's wash in Firefly, right?
Yep.
Like, there's the whole threat of death as they're landing. Things are crazy.
Great
scene.
And
they land and you're like, oh, okay, he did it. Everything's fine. Oh, he died.
Spear through the heart. Yeah.
Like, it's the timing of it can matter.
Absolutely. It's, man, okay. So the deaths that I have used that have gotten like the most emotional impact that people still talk about. Okay. Spoilers, but guys, I've been doing this a long time. So when I kill Sam Haven.
Yeah.
In Monster Hunter Vendetta.
Vendetta.
People still talk about it. Why? Cause they cared about Sam.
Well, and because
other characters cared about
and
Sam.
And because he almost didn't make it through book one.
No, the dude was a badass, and he was a lovable badass, and he felt like a real human being.
And everyone in the book loves him.
Oh, yeah, because he's just a great dude.
Yeah.
And he's a rapscallion. I mean, he is a profane, angry...
He's Sam Elliott.
Yeah, he's young Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
And he battles monsters for a living, and he's awesome. All right, everybody loves this guy. And when I kill him, he dies at the hand of a former friend. And it's brutal and it's sudden.
Yeah.
And, it's very fitting with the world we've lived in and world we established. And the reaction that everybody has afterwards is like just shock. And which is, it mirrors the shock the reader felt.
Exactly.
And I still, this is like 12 years later, 13 years later, people still talk about that death scene. The other one is Lance Talon.
Yeah.
Which he died at the same time as Steve Diamond, but Steve Diamond wasn't as well known amongst the Knights of the Grimoire.
I mean, so that was the joke, right? Like someone on the Monster Hunter Facebook group said something like, we need to have an anthology of Grimoir stories. And I remember commenting, it might've been on one of Bridget's comments. I remember saying, oh heck yes. And if this happens, I'm writing a story about Steve Diamond, the telekinetic, because how meta ridiculous would that be? Steve Diamond writing about the character that's named after him, named Steve Diamond within the story. Like, it would just be stupid and awesome.
But yeah,
he's a hero, Larry.
Well, cause they died in the same sequence. But
that was messed up.
It was messed up. Like it was violent. It was a surprise attack.
Exactly. Everything's going, they're just on the airship.
These guys were on land cause they were in Shanghai, but, and half the crew was on the airship.
Right.
On the Traveler. And then all of a sudden it was like ninjas attack.
Teleporting ninjas, baby.
Teleporting. And I accentuated the deadliness of teleporting ninjas.
Well, you've been doing that since the first book.
I know. But I had a squad of teleporting ninjas, boom, and it, people just getting stabbed instantaneously. And, but like what happens is Lance gets just, he gets hurt.
Killed.
Like he gets hurt.
He just gets whooped.
But he gets back up and he fights to the death in a way that is so balls to the wall. Like that everybody, I mean, he just goes balls to the wall in his death scene. That's another one too, is like you can have people die sudden and just they die. You can have also where guys go out in a blaze of glory.
There's a lot of value in the blaze of glory tactic of using the death.
Oh, in fiction? Oh my gosh.
Huge value to it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. If you have a guy come back for the brink of the death and fight on a bit further and you do it well and you pull it off, people will remember that.
This is why Seven Samurai or the other variant that you and I both adore, 13 Assassins.
Oh, such a good movie.
This is why those work.
Both of those
really
are fantastic movies.
And it's because it's because a lot of those guys, they're already dead.
Well, yeah, they go into battle. They've already, I mean, Ashok Vidal talks about that in the Son of the Black Sword series, where all truly great swordsmen have already accepted death.
They've already died.
And it just is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, but you go out and you still perform, but you can't perform. Your greatest likelihood of survival is if you've already accepted that you're dead. Mm-hmm. And then you do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
You know? And there is that element. The audience is that, those moments of heroic sacrifice, death, that resonates with audiences. Like mankind, deep down, most of us have like this yearning, like deep down in our DNA somewhere where we want to die valiantly on a hill, holding up our flag, surrounded by the bodies of our enemies, you know, and go out like a boss.
Yeah.
You know, we all have, not all of us. I know a lot of people don't, but many people still have that in our DNA.
Yeah.
You know? And so when you write a scene like that, it resonates.
Well, and I think Hollywood and such, and and fiction writers too, they see the impact of that in good stories. And so then they just try to throw that in a lot of different places.
Right.
So in one of our previous Q&A, we were talking about the first Wonder Woman movie, right? And how, as a female character, the chick who plays Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot, she was fantastic.
I thought she was great.
It was great. But here's where I have a bone to pick with that. Chris Pine's death is pointless. Because she could have rescued him.
And I don't remember it.
He was like, he like took off in a plane. There was like a bomb or something in it and it blew up in the air. Hmm. And she like watched sadly from the ground. And I'm like, you had time. You could have saved him. His death meant nothing. It meant nothing.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all. So that, I mean, that tells you how little it meant that I don't remember it at all.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem. We remember the death of a puppy in the first John Wick movie more than we remember the death of the main character in the first Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. We'll just continue on the topic. We'll be right back.
The war between Almacia and the Empire of Kolokovia is in its 100th year. Casualties grow on both sides as the conflict leaves no corner of the world untouched. Alarion Glazkov's quiet life on the fringes of the Empire is thrown into chaos when an impossible tragedy strikes his village. When he is conscripted into the Tsarist military, he is sent to serve in The Wall, an elite regiment that pilots suits of armor made from the husks of dead goblins. But the Great War is not the only, or even the worst, danger facing Larian, as he is caught in a millennia-old conflict between two goddesses. He must survive the ravages of trench warfare, horrific monsters from another world, and the treacherous internal politics of the country he serves. New military fantasy from Master of Horror Steve Diamond, international bestseller Larry Correa. Pick up your copy today.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Okay, I want to kind of continue on the theme that we kind of ended with on the top half of the episode. And I want to go the John Wick route. There is a trope, you know, where you know a bad guy's a bad guy because he kills a puppy, right?
And kick the dog.
Kick the dog,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And there is that. Here's what I think John Wick did better. They used that trope to their advantage, but they got double impact out of it. And this is why it worked, and this is why it spawned basically you're okay with John Wick murdering the world during the whole series. It's what that death represented. It's very apparent very early on that John Wick, the one guy, and you're only as a viewer, you're only having to care about one guy, which is good. He's just lost his wife or his partner. Okay. And I think the vast majority of the world can understand something like that. Like, you know, most of us have experienced loss of some category. Yeah,
and she got him the dog, so he'd have something else to take care of. She got him the
dog that it's like, this is her last connection to him on the planet. And then the dog is killed. Which means not only is the dog killed, which ain't nobody like it when a dog gets killed.
Oh, man. People are still mad at me for when Heather ate her dog in Monster Hunter Alpha.
Sure.
Otto. Three-legged Otto. The tripod Otto. Dog. Oh, man. People, speaking of character death, holy crap. Kill the dog and you never hear the end of it.
No, yeah. Never.
That was tragic.
But it was like, as the viewer, it was like, and for John Wick, it was like his wife had been killed again.
Yep. And it's not, and you don't realize, yeah, there's a great scene afterwards where like he's in the shower and like all of a sudden you realize he's got this giant back tattoo that is like some sort of, you know, criminal
like
syndication. And then he's digging up a box full of gold coins and guns.
You're like, oh dear.
Yeah.
But as the viewer, you immediately root for him. And there's the scene where he's, there's the scenes like where he actually shows the anguish that he feels. And Keanu Reeves does a good job. Keanu Reeves isn't known for being like a very good emotional actor.
Yeah.
But he's wonderful in that movie.
Oh, he was born to play John Wick. His lack of displaying emotion was perfect was casting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's what I like about the use of death in that. They used the emotional impact on him, the one character you actually care about in the beginning and who you know you will care about for the rest of the show, hopefully, the rest of the series, hopefully. They use that emotional impact and resonance that most people will appreciate and understand. You know, puppy, wife, or, I mean, it could have been reverse. It could have been a woman with a husband and it would have been just as fine. It would have been fine. That emotional impact in the way that I think all viewers can relate to it is what gives it power. It's such a relatable death.
Yeah.
It's like when we talk about, you know, emotional, like fear and horror and stuff. We had the episode with Casey Azell where we were talking about, you know, emotional commonality and
shared
emotion, yeah. Shared states. You know, if a fear or a love or any emotion is too specific, you kind of lose its ability to grab people. But if it is a more base fear or a base love, more people can grab onto it. And the same is with death.
Right.
And so I love how good shows, good books can tap into an emotion and make us feel like, okay, yeah, I get it. I get it.
So I still think some of the greatest storytelling ever told, and this features a character death too, was the first few minutes of Up.
The movie Up. My goodness, yes.
Some of the greatest storytelling ever told.
Yeah.
And it's just this little silly cartoon, but that opening of Up, where it shows a relationship.
That's the best part of the movie.
Yeah, I don't remember the rest of the movie. I don't care about the rest of the movie at all. But that opening, emotional devastation every time I watch it.
Oh, it kills you.
Yeah, because in those few minutes, it makes you care. It tells you who these two people are, what they mean to each other, how much they love each other, and then it takes that away.
Yeah.
And it just, it goes through the life, and it's like, and it's like so much story, so concisely, absolute perfection.
And if, man, the first time I watched that, obviously I was married. I mean, you and I have each been married for forever.
26 years for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm at 22, 3.
Yeah.
23 almost. As a guy, like watching that scene,
yeah,
dude, that wrecked me.
Yeah.
That wrecked me.
That, so that to me is one of the best examples ever of character death meaning something.
Yeah.
And like, and it just absolutely, if they, that on its own had just been a film, just those first 5 minutes,
it would have been good.
Yeah. I mean, that, and that's the thing, that guys, that's what you're going for. If you can lock in that level of give a damn about your characters, and then you take them away, it's like somebody really died.
Yeah.
And it's like having, it's like facing the, and loss is a huge, talk about like with Casey, that's a universal human thing.
Yes.
That we all get. Yep. Loss and fear of loss, we all get it. So when you put your characters in these situations and they feel like people when you take them away, boom, emotional impact. Like, oh my gosh. I tear up just thinking about that scene.
Oh, man, no. It, well, it has such powerful impact, right? Like, you know, I think part of my big issue these days with cinema and with books is death is really cheap. It's cheap for the viewer. It's cheap for the reader. It's cheap. They're going for, okay, it's like in horror, the jump scare, right? Like all of a sudden something just, there's a spike in sound and music to cue the startle response, to trigger the quick flush of adrenaline in your system. And it's the cheap scare, and it doesn't actually matter right after that. Right?
Right.
Because everyone understands that when there is a big, meaningful death, it has such emotional resonance and impact. You know, Lord of the Rings, the death of Boromir, right? It matters because you've seen the good in Boromir, you've seen the bad in Boromir. You understand that he actually cares about these little hobbits. You understand that his desire to get the ring, there's always a little bit of selfishness in it, but there is an altruistic side to it.
It's a noble intention.
Yeah. You know, he's like, hey, if I have this, I'll have the power. I can save my people. The end. And that, and there's an altruism there. But these days, so many people are, you know, it's, for lack of a better term, it's everybody is writing a B movie and writing a B movie these days.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a lot of character death that doesn't matter because the characters don't matter that much. You can't have that emotional resonance with every single character death in your book if you're writing any sort of action-y type thing, because people are going to die. You can't have emotional resonance over the death of henchman number 3.
No.
Because then you're not writing an action-adventure thing anymore. You're now writing like a war story on the introspection of man's inhumanity to man, okay?
And but even then, here's what I will say to that, though. If you're killing that person, you are showing, you're showing that there is a threat to your main character and that they dodged the bullet this time.
Yeah.
And so I will still argue that if you're just going to kill a dude, like, ask yourself why.
Well, usually for me, there's like they got in Ashok's way.
Yeah.
Or, you know, annoyed him mildly.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if your main character is causing death.
Well, too, also we talk about this when we're talking about like when you pick your genre.
Mm-hmm.
How dark is your world? How cheap is life?
Well, and that's important. That's important.
How much is life worth in this universe? Because if you're writing like dark epic fantasy, lots and lots and lots of people are going to die.
That's the point. You know, death is cheap.
Yeah, and the only life is currency. Cheap. And the only emotional resonance deaths you're going to get probably are the ones that you intend because you've developed those people to matter more.
Well, and how I tackle that sort of thing, it is. Those deaths come cheap, and the fact that those deaths are coming cheap matters to the character.
Right.
It's like in Servants, right? Like, dude, people are dying left and right. This war's been going on for 100 years.
And it actually matters to Alarion.
And Alarion's like, I don't like how people are being thrown away.
Yeah, because we made a paladin. We basically wrote a paladin in a world that has no paladins.
Yeah, and then you've got the Trench or Daris, who's like, guys, this sucks. I am disposable.
He's the most Slavic of all the characters, really. Yeah. He's like just grim.
Well, and this is why, you know, he's a character in the second book, a POV character in the second book, and that's because having it from the perspective of the throwaway is super valuable.
Yeah.
And it means something.
Means something. Honestly, it's like the difference between a war movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Sure.
And Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
You see, it's the kind of story it's the type of story you're telling.
Well, and man, Band of Brothers is... I mean, it's a clinic in death.
Well, every character who dies in that show...
You care.
You care. Every single one. Because it's a dude. It's a normal dude.
Well, and here's what's interesting. Because I think it's episode 4 or 5 in the season. That's called The Replacements, I think is what it's called.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the deaths, the absence of those earlier characters that you cared about, they make you feel it even more in that episode. Because the other people are coming in. These replacements are coming in and everyone's like, you don't matter to me.
Yeah. I don't know you. You're nothing to me.
You're filling shoes of a guy who you can never hope to equal to me. And that attitude is so, it's so crisp within it.
Yeah. And then the scene where the guy goes to pick up the laundry, he goes to pick up his laundry.
Oh my gosh.
And they're like, what about all these other dudes? They haven't picked theirs up.
He's like, I'll take them.
I'll take them. And it's just... Oh man, it's like 8 other guys, like just their clothing there, just waiting to get picked up.
Oh my goodness.
And it never would because they're dead.
Oh.
You know, and it just hits you again.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a good war movie or a good war series. I think Band of Brothers is probably top one or two.
Yeah, it's the GOAT.
I think that if you want a good study in death, that might be your go-to because you see it's a series. So it can spend the time letting you get to know characters and letting characters get to know each other. And you're given the opportunity to care. Because conversely you have the Pacific, which you kind of care about a couple of the characters, but for the most part, you're just like, don't care.
If they're interchangeable nobodies and they die and then the reader's not going to care. That's just is how it is. And that goes back to the whole, I blew up the planet. I'm so cool.
Yeah.
No one cares.
No.
No, it doesn't matter. It's the whole one death is a tragedy. A million is a statistic, you know? And if you look at it like that, As the writer, do you want to establish a tragedy or not? And if you want to establish a tragedy, then you need to establish that character and why you care about him, and then have the other characters react to that tragedy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
make them feel.
You have to. You have to. I mean, otherwise, what are you doing?
Not my best known work because it's my early stuff. And I did the Dead Six series with Mike Kupri.
Are you talking about Armpit Shot?
Oh, well, ours Armpit Shot. Well, because it was Wheeler.
From Dead Six, yeah.
Yeah. So I was actually thinking about Carl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So one of the main characters had, well, so two deaths. One character's not as fleshed out. Other character's pretty major, but both are sudden. Because this is basically modern warfare kind of stuff. And we have one guy get shot by a jumpy guard at a checkpoint.
At a checkpoint, yep.
And
that's the one that stuck with me.
Because this dude is a total badass. And he's a badass amongst a unit of elite badasses. And they're sneaking their way through this border check or this like checkpoint in a city. They got their fake papers. They're bluffing their way through. Guard gets really jumpy, pulls out his pistol. They're yelling back and forth in Arabic. And he pops off a shot. Driver floors it. They take off. And they think they're away.
And then he dies.
And then he dies because he got shot in the armpit while he was driving, went in through his vest. And
yeah. Which?
It happens. Yeah.
It happens.
And he didn't even know he was shot.
Yeah.
He didn't even know he shot until his blood pressure just was dropping too fast. Mm-hmm. And then he was dead. And yeah, sudden. And then there was another one. But I was thinking about Carl. So they do this heist, and it's this big heist, and they're this is a character the main character loves this guy, loves him like an older brother, and they've gone through all this stuff together, and they've triumphed, and boom, there's the double cross. And bad guy comes out of nowhere, shoots him dead, and it's like just what the crap, you know? And it's like it hits the reader, and then it hits the reader again as the characters around them react to this death.
Yes.
Now those books are full of death. Like I said, those are not my most well-known works.
No, they're really good though.
They're really good. I would put them up against any of the thriller genre stuff.
Oh,
but I just never took off in thrillers. But if you like thrillers, check out Dead Six. Check out that series. Alliance of Shadows is the collection.
Yeah.
Secret Wars is the collection. Secret Wars is the collection. Alliance of Shadows is the third book. Yeah, I was gonna say. Swords of X is the second book.
Yeah. Here's death from a different angle in why it works. And I'm going to hit the Superman well again. I talked about it earlier in the top half. And I'll talk about why it didn't work in the remake. Okay. In the comics and in almost all Superman lore, how does Clark Kent, his adopted dad, die? Heart attack. That's how he dies. Superman can do anything. He can do anything, right? He's a god. He, for all intents and purposes, he's a god. But being a god with infinite strength, with infinite speed, can shoot laser beams out of his eyes, literally. Whatever, right? Can fly to space, means absolutely nothing when your human dad has a heart attack. And so, and it's a thing that he can't stop.
Didn't they change to the new one?
And they changed to the new one that a tornado gets in. And I'm like, this is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. I'm all for artistic license.
Why didn't Superman just fly in there and get him?
Well, I'm just like, dude, you run so fast no one can see you. Just go save him.
Yeah, just run this over is there stupid. Real fast, grab him.
Yeah, Kevin Costner died for no good reason. So what I love about the original, the we'll call it canonical death of Jonathan Kent is that the death matters because it shows humanity impacts a god.
Yeah, even as awesome as Superman is, he is still subject to human mortality.
Yeah. Well, and then what that does, really, when you think about it, is it makes Superman question the fact that he's like, he's going to live forever. And literally everyone and anyone that he cares about will die around him. He can't do anything about it. And that is powerful. Because when you have a character that's so powerful like Superman is, how do you give him weakness? How do you, that's outside of a rock. How do you give him emotional weakness? How do you give him something that readers and stuff can relate to on a human level?
How do they get somebody so good as Henry Cavill yet make movies so bad?
I don't know. They don't listen to him.
You know what I mean?
I mean, They screwed him in The Witcher.
Just let that dude fly his nerd flag high and everything will be fine. But they never listen.
No, they don't. They don't. Well, and Frank, and I mean, if you want to touch on another property, his The Witcher, I mean, he's, when you look at how Witchers are created, they're a commodity. It's a whole bunch of children that are put through horrific training and then an even more horrific test that kills them, like kills almost all of them. And then only like a couple survive. And then they're turned into mutants and they're shunned by society. And it's like they go about dealing death on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So
until you need to hire one to kill your local monster infestation.
Yeah. Yeah. And so death and destruction, he views it from a very different perspective.
Also establish that as a world where life is super cheap.
Yes. Yeah. It's fascinating, right? Like, and so I, for all of you out there who are listening, I hope what you're gleaning from this is kind of a very simple reduction. And that's, if you want death to matter, it has to matter to a few different parties. One, it has to matter to the reader. And two, it has to matter to the characters around which the death occurs. Because if it doesn't matter to any of them, it doesn't matter to anybody.
If it doesn't affect them, it's not going to affect the readers.
Right. All right. That's all the time we have for you today. To our boy, Rick, hope that helped. Hope that's gives you some options. And to all our other listeners out there, we love you too. And just not as much as Rick. Just kidding.
For 99 cents a month, we will love you as much as Rick.
For 99 cents as much. Yeah, we will
up love you. Up to $9.99 a month. We'll totally love you long time.
That's right. We'll love you long time. It's the Rider Dojo. We'll see you on the next one.
Rider Dojo with Steve Diamond and Larry Correa. Produced by Jack Wilder and Bear and Hair Studios. Theme song, Word Mercenaries by Craig Nyberg. New episodes come out every Wednesday wherever you stream your content. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can help support us by going to anchor.fm/writerdojo, by leaving a 5-star rating and review, and by helping to spread the word. To advertise on the Writer Dojo, email ads@writerdojo.com. All questions and comments can be emailed to questions@writerdojo.com.
I've killed a lot of people.